today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Jim, are we not men?
Well, let's examine this for a second, Patrick. We hang out in basements, surrounded by records. I think the jury's still out on that one. All right, Patrick, it's kind of fun going through the record collection.
It really is, Jim. I got to say thanks to you, because you came up with a really great list of, kind of album anniversaries around this time, and it was really extensive. Actually, we had to really go through and pare down.
We did.
I think we could have picked four or five other ones, you know, that were also an anniversary this time.
I'd like to say that I went through a massive record collection and picked out the ones that I thought we should do, but really it was just, you know, sort of doing some Googling around, But that's fine. You know,
that's a big list.
We came up with some albums that are having, you know, big anniversaries this year or this time of this year. We did this earlier in the year. We've done a few different records that have, you know, 50th, 40th anniversaries, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you can go back into our feed and find some of those. These that we're doing this week are more kind of like the middle part of the year.
Yeah.
That they had anniversaries or key anniversaries.
Yeah, late summer, fall.
And this album that we're going to do today came out in 1978, so 40 years ago, and it was released in August of 1978.
Right.
Get to that in just a second. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Okay, now, this album is officially Q colon Are We Not Men A colon We Are Devo, right? The most sort of awkward album title.
Really, it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And people just call it, you know, Are We Not Men, We Are Devo, or just Are We Not Men is how you refer to it. And it's funny because on the album cover itself, it doesn't even have the answer part
it
on
doesn't.
There.
It's no. Just,
but anyway, Devo's debut album.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned, 1978, and I threw this out there as one I thought maybe we should do just because I had this sort of notion in my mind, like, I think this is kind of an important record.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And even though I've never been a huge Devo fan, I just kind of have that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And also, maybe it's also the Ohio thing, too.
Yes.
They're from Akron.
Yep.
And to me, there's always been something really interesting about that for such an important, influential new wave band doing like really weird stuff, that they were from the heartland of
the
country.
Isn't that interesting?
You know?
Yeah.
But we also earlier in the year talked about Perubu.
That's right.
You know, Cleveland
right.
band. There was something, you know, in Northeast Ohio that
was
happening a little bit too.
Yeah.
The Dead Boys were also from up there.
Right.
And
Tin Huey was another band that was around.
So, and Devo, you know, they were college.
Definitely intellectuals.
Kent State.
Art school
so,
guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's all that. But my history with Devo is probably like a lot of people's, which was that probably the first song I heard was Whip It.
Yeah.
Which was a big hit. That's a little bit later than what we're talking about here. And then from there, you sort of hear some other songs and you sort of get into their catalog and everything. And I've listened to these records, but, you know, I can't say that I've ever been like a super hyper Devo fan. I know there are those people out there.
Oh, yeah, there are.
But they're one of those bands you always like appreciate. You knew somewhere in the back of your mind that maybe they weren't getting as much credit as they should for what they did. And so going back and listening to this album now, a couple things really struck me about it. One was just how many of the songs immediately just sort of leapt out to me that I knew, you know, so that was great. The other one was there's more guitar in it than I
there
thought.
Is.
You know, again, you kind of think of Devo as a synth band, but they had a really cool guitar sound.
Yeah.
And especially on this first record.
Yeah.
And then the other thing too was just like for 1978, this had to have been considered really weird.
That's what
music.
I was going to say.
But today it seems actually pretty accessible and really kind of like, you know, very danceable and very like fun record. Like you could put this on at a party and people would have a good time, right?
I think you hit it right on the nose. It's so weirdly contemporary now and like, so obviously we don't know. I mean, we were too little probably to understand how bizarre this must have been when it came out and how left field and strange. Yet it does. It's been so assimilated by so many bands, all the techniques and the moves and the quirkiness and the rigidity of some of the rhythms. But yet it's influenced, you know, it's gone down through the years and really been picked up by a lot of people.
And one thing I was reading about this yesterday and today, again, you know, going back to the late 70s, which, you know, you're talking at a time when, you know, music had been, you know, this kind of like big bloated classic rock. And then you had disco, you know, just like big, huge, like, superstars,
yeah,
massive tours, you know, big egos, all this kind of stuff, right? And for a band like this, first of all, they were on a major label. They were on Warner Brothers, right? You know, so mm-hmm. a band like this to sort of come along and have any kind of success, I think, is kind of amazing.
Really?
But also, the other thing I think is really fascinating is that it really kind of indicates that there was sort of a sea change happening here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was really only 1 year before this was the Sex Pistols.
Yep.
And punk at that time never really became a big commercial force mm-mm. in the U.S., more so in the U.K. But New Wave, to follow really sort of that quickly, it did. It mm-hmm. started to latch mm-hmm. onto people, and the kids started to really get into yep. it and buying it. And it was almost this, I think in the U.S., this was the music that sort of like took hold and really started to change things in terms of the pop music landscape, right?
You kind of answered the question I was going to ask you, I think, which was, do you consider this a punk album?
I don't.
I don't either.
I think of this as new wave.
But, me too.
But I think there's some, you know, there's some punkish elements. So why don't we just do this? So I mentioned sort of the guitar mm-hmm. nature of it and sort of the danceability of it and really even kind of the poppiness of it in a different sort of way. Let's drop the needle on the first track.
Okay.
And already, you know, you get that sense. Shows the power of a great riff.
Yeah, your point is well made. That if you didn't have the visuals, removed from the visuals, it sounds like a bar band that just ate a bunch of speed and was playing really fast. Yeah,
I even just love the name of the song, Uncontrollable Urge. Yeah. And it already gives you a different sense of what this band is about. But yeah, you mentioned the visuals obviously were a big thing with Devo, right? Mm-hmm. So they came right out of the box. They came from, you know, sort of an artistic background and almost to the point of making this, you know, a performance art project. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They did like a weird film or something about de-evolution,
right?
And that's where the name comes from.
Yeah, and I think that's the other part of it. When you look at the songs, the titles, and think about it, you know, Too Much Paranoia's, Mongoloid especially, right? Mm-hmm. I Can't Get No Satisfaction, Jocko Homo.
We need to hit on that a little bit.
And that's the other thing that I don't think it's possible for us to appreciate listening back to it now was, how weird must it have seemed that here was a band like with a theme, an overarching theme of devolution, which seemed really weird and nerdy, but I don't know, maybe they were onto something back in 78.
That's right. The whole thing was meant to be some sort of, you know, commentary on humanity.
That's right. And so, society and, you know, a lot of it really is about looking inward and losing control and being hard to live in modern society and modern life in America. It's really pretty interesting.
But yet they were dismissed to some extent as being sort of a novelty band, which I think is interesting because today I don't see that really at all.
No.
But I guess at the time, if you were just doing stuff that was just, I guess there was maybe a certain kitsch factor to it to a lot of people.
Too.
And maybe it was, again, because of the look that they tried to take on. It was almost like, well, it's fun and it's weird and, you can take a break from, you know, normal life and enjoy this, but it's not really like serious.
Yeah. And you know, anybody who was really into it was just like a real weirdo,
yeah,
you know, but it was fun to listen to. And like you said, I think most people got introduced to them by Whippet and stuff like that. But also it was interesting to me going back, and I don't think I ever knew this. I think I knew it at some point in reading, but certainly I probably never knew it back in the early days when I first came across Devo, that Brian Eno produced this record.
Yes.
And actually they didn't have a deal at the time.
He
paid for it all in the hopes of like splitting, you know, some of the profits once it was picked up by a label. And
they had put out, you know, at least one or maybe more singles,
yeah,
just like on their own, mm-hmm, or with some small label,
yep,
and caught the attention of
Bowie.
I think,
yeah,
first, like David Bowie, yeah, and Iggy Pop, you know?
Yeah, well, that's right. It was Iggy Pop. Yeah.
Like really, mm-hmm, you know, kind of got into this, heard,
yeah,
this stuff. And then Brian Eno and Bowie apparently wanted to produce this record.
That's right.
But he couldn't work it out with his schedule. And I think he did maybe assist in some ways. But Brian Eno flew them to Germany,
right,
to record.
Yeah. They actually recorded at Connie Plank's studio, who was a krautrock guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, and then he ended up getting them on a major label and this got released.
It's incredible.
And, you know, and it got a fair amount of attention. And
yeah,
to the point where they played on Saturday Night Live.
That's right.
In 1978.
Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah.
Again, I think that may not seem like much today, but
yeah,
back then, even for the show that was kind of the counterculture show, this was weird. This,
yeah,
was
very weird.
This was sort of out of bounds. Those guys were mostly, you know, the Lorne Michaels and those crew, that crew, they were children of the 60s.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
right.
They were kids, mm-hmm, of the 60s. This was really different kind of thing.
It was.
So speaking of that, let's do this, because what I did not know about the Saturday Night Live thing until today was that the week before they were on,
uh-huh,
the Rolling Stones were on the
show.
Oh,
is that right? I didn't know that.
And then the next week, Devo comes on
and plays.
And this was the first song they played. So my question, my cue, colon, mm-hmm, is, can one of the greatest rock songs of all time also produce one of the greatest rock covers,
yeah,
of all time?
It certainly did. I would totally agree. This is one of the greatest covers of all time.
I mean, it seems impossible.
It really does.
That anybody would be able to cover that song and like really make it their own,
yeah,
in a way that you just completely embrace it. And there you go. Right. The one thing I want to say about this too is,
yeah,
well, a couple things. First of all, it is a good trick that bands will do, and I don't know if Devo did this on purpose or not, or they just really had this great take on this song and wanted to get it out there. But one way to get attention to your debut album is to do a cover song.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their song,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in this way, completely change it up so much that people have to pay attention,
yep,
to it in some way. But also, the other thing that's really weird about that song, too, is you notice it's like, the rhythms don't quite match up. Like,
yeah,
the bass line,
I love that,
is playing this sort of rhythm that doesn't really match up with what the singer's doing and what the guitar is doing and all this. When you pick that apart, when you devolve it.
Yeah, there you go.
It's really crazy.
They did devolve this song, and it is brilliant. And to me, it's much more believable coming from Devo than it is like from Mick Jagger not getting satisfaction. Like, sure, dude, come on, you got plenty of satisfaction. But these guys, you're like, maybe they really didn't.
That's right.
And to your point, Jim, four of the songs, I believe they were all re-recorded for this album, but Mongoloid and Jocko Homo and I Can't Get No Satisfaction, along with I Saw My Baby Getting, were all released on singles in 77 on the Bougie Boy label, which was their, I think, their label or a little label at Cleveland. I don't know either, but that's interesting that it was out there, like you said, kind of beforehand and with a movie. That's what they had. I just can't imagine. Now, I will say, as far as influences, I do hear a little bit of Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention is a little bit in here, and a little bit of Captain Beefheart's kind of, you know, sideways rhythm. But other than that, there's not a lot you can really pick out, you know, that influenced the band. It's a pretty startlingly original sound that they achieved on this record.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I guess maybe, well, let me think here. Where did this line up with Talking Heads? Right at the same time.
Right
Talking
about Heads 77, same time. Right? Mm-hmm. Yep, so there is some of that as well. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good point.
I think
they, you know, I don't know how much cross-breeding or pollination or I don't who know heard either. Who either, because they're out there in the Midwest.
I mean, I have to think that they ran in some of the same circles as Peru Boo.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So there was a bit of a scene, like I said, in Northeast Ohio that was kind of developing some interesting music.
And it's interesting, when we were talking about Para Ubu, I think the one thing that we both agreed upon was they already had the sound of the future. Like, even though their records came out like 76 and 77, it was sounded like 1980 already.
That's
There's some of that with Devo too. Man, it's a really good record going back. Like, I'm with you. I thought it was kind of weird and off-putting at first. It took me a long time to really accept it. And Freedom of Choice was more the record where I got into Devo. Like, that was much more easier to get in, accessible to me. And just for a second, let's talk about the cover of this album, because it's so weird when you think about it. Like, there's a picture of a guy, supposedly the golfer Chichi Rodriguez, in front of a golf ball. Like, what does that mean?
It doesn't make any sense.
It does not make any sense at all. It really doesn't. Yet it's so instantly identifiable now when you see it. And like you said, you don't even really think about it, but the answer to the question is not on the front of the album. You got to go to the back to see it.
That's right. It's almost, I mean, again, this kind of thing has become so commonplace now that you don't think of it at all, but it's almost that notion back then of like taking imagery that's so obviously normal.
Yeah.
That, you know, a golfer and a golf ball.
Right.
You know, there's like nothing more sort of like mainstream America
really isn't.
Than that. And yet using that as the image for something that's really, you know, pushing things in a totally different direction.
Very bizarre. Yeah. And the kind of the Devo lettering and, you know, everything. They had just an incredible sense of style. And
but it's an aesthetic that you can't. Well, OK, so I was just about to say, and then I realized the connection in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say it's an aesthetic that's almost Wes Anderson-like.
Yeah, it really is.
In that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo has gone on to become a very successful composer of film scores.
Extremely.
And one of the directors he works with a lot is Wes Anderson.
There you go.
Right? So
exactly
they have that same kind of sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And I know he did some music for the Rugrats TV special, show. He had the theme music for that,
I think he's made a small fortune off of that.
That seeped into my consciousness a lot in the 90s, that's for sure.
But it's like almost, in some ways, it's sort of a commentary on, you know, on mainstream life and living. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think in the same way of like David Byrne doing, you know, Once in a Lifetime or things like that, there's always this kind of undercurrent of like this notion that these lives we live are not what they seem.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And that's kind of a lot of what Devo, I think, talks about.
Yeah, absolutely.
In these songs.
Mm-hmm. Our interior lives are completely different. And I think that's, you know, thinking back now as we sit here today, like, you know, surrounded by devices and all kinds of different things, you know, 1978 seems a little quaint, you know. But at that time, modern technology was really starting to creep in a lot of different ways, too. So I think it's, wow, it really was ahead of its time.
I think this is one of those records that if you had it in your collection at the time, like that would mark you as like something.
Yeah.
Right?
Super cool. Yeah. Yeah.
I think this band, they only had a few more records after this, right? They only went, they had, the, you know, Freedom of Choice.
And they had Duty Now was, for the Future was their second one, which I don't think, it was kind of a classic second album. I don't think it necessarily really contained a lot of their, you know, their best work. And then it was really with Freedom of Choice where they kind of got back, you know, into the swing of things. And that's a classic album too. There's a lot of songs on there that have been covered, the title track. I know, I think it was Superchunk. I did a cover of Girl You Want, the first song on Freedom of Choice. So
amazing song.
Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stuff. And of course, Whip It.
Yeah. And then a couple more into the 80s and they kind of went different directions with their music, right?
Mid-80s, I think. It was kind of had fallen apart by that point.
Yeah. All right. Very good. So there you go.
Great call.
Are We Not Men? We are Devo.
Correct.
All right. So tell us what you think about Devo.
Yep.
You can call 612-440-1984. Leave a message there. We'll put your voice on the show. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com.
Yes.
Or speaking of modern technology, you can find us on various social medias. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. Tell us what you think. I'd really like to hear some more what people think of Devo, because I think...
It's curious.
Again, in the same way of maybe like the B-52s or bands of that time, they kind of got... They kind of got dismissed, I think, a lot as being, like I said, kind of a novelty band, kind of jokey, hokey, whatever it might be. But I think they're deeper than that.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're more important than that.
There was a lot going on there.
And I think a lot of what you heard, I think they inspired and influenced a lot of bands.
I would totally, completely agree with you. Yeah. And I think that's why it sounds so contemporary and so kind of familiar now when you kind of go back and listen to some of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so what should we play out with here, Patrick?
I don't know, Jim. What do you feel like hearing? I'm a huge fan of Mongoloid. I love that song. So we could go out with that
one. I think that's a good one. And it, like you mentioned, that was a single that they put out earlier. But I don't think that one has gotten as much attention over the years as some of the others, like Jocko Homo and other things. So
totally
agree. Let's play that one.
Okay.
All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Tomorrow we have another important album anniversary.
Yes, right? We do.
Close out the week. You're not going to want to miss that.
No.
All right, here we go. It's Mongoloid, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Jim, are we not men?